from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, you may have noticed last week there was a bit of a bonus show disaster that...
oh, you and Jeff, like, recorded one and then you didn't record it. What was the
deal? No, I did record it, except for the problem was that my mic wasn't on.
It wasn't plugged in properly.
It wasn't plugged in properly. So all you hear is Jeff's response to everything I say.
That sucks. I you know, because I thought that finally somebody had fucked up like I fuck up and forgot to, like, hit the record
button. No, it was recording. It's just one of those things where I actually tried to salvage it. You know when you take one of the, you
yeah, no,
level it out and you think to yourself, well, I'll just bring Jeff down and that'll bring me up. But the problem is that everybody sounds like they're talking at the Grand Canyon. And you're just like, I don't even want to put this show. It was a good show, but the sound quality is so terrible. That's the only thing you would think about during the entire experience.
Yeah.
And then say, like, oh, sorry, guys, you'll miss one. Fuck it. Trust me. We'll do one again. It'll be a lost show, like almost one of those things that Once Upon in a Blue Moon we might release and say, hey, remember that piece of shit audio recording that we were just talking about? Ta-da! Here it is.
Well, you know, one of the positive things coming from the other site is that I'm doing that whole... I've put myself on a tight schedule, because seriously, if you guys think the Good Atheist is being bad for keeping things on track, you have no idea. My website's even worse. So next month, October, it's going to be all on time. So I don't know if that's going to just magically improve things over on the Good Atheist side as well, but I guess we'll see.
Typically, that kind of thing does. As soon as one of us has discipline, then both of us feel as though we must. So discipline is always a good thing to have.
Indeed.
Wouldn't you agree? On today's show, we're going to be talking about a couple things. One is the live podcast we're going to be doing tomorrow for the Atheist Alliance International conference in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. We'll also be talking about Ray Comfort and his opinions on Stephen Hawking.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
And we'll also be talking about baptisms. Specifically, somebody, a new patron, had a question about it, and I wanted to address it during the show. But before we start, I want to actually mention something else that another patron sent me, which was a link to, I sent you this, a Hoover Institute
study
that had found that non-believers were less generous than religious people. And I thought that we would begin the show by talking a little bit about this, because I have a bit of my pet theory concerning this study. I mean, we've talked about it before. Number one, what is the reliability of many of the studies that are released on anything?
Well, how many times a day do you read a scientific article where it has some very dubious claim that's backed up by nothing but data? And that always worries me, that what you're getting is these scientists who are running these tests and are collecting this data. And, you know, I'll trust the data, but I never trust what these people infer or what the press infers based on that.
Well, look, science is a process, right? It's not just one person releasing a study and saying, hey, science has been done. I collected data, made observations and conclusions.
The end.
And the end. No, you're like, this will continue on for some time, and over the long term, eventually something pretty close to the truth will kind of come out. When it comes to this type of study, though, there was a few points that I kind of had a problem with in terms of how do we define not only someone's willingness to give money, but also willingness to give time, so volunteering, because they were saying, well, disproportionately, sectarians volunteer more than their secular counterparts. And here's something that I did want to mention, because I'm absolutely sure that this was still part of their study, because it's still hard to get the raw data on the study itself. But how do we define exactly volunteering? Like, if a person who listens to The Good Atheist is doing stuff to help me out, are they volunteering? Or does it have to be from a recognized nonprofit? And how many recognized nonprofits are religious? You know, like, if you donate time at your church, do they count that as part of it? Obviously they will, but that's kind of a problem, because we don't have these kinds of institutions where we just do that. And that also reminds me of the fact that at the same time you could say, well, religious people are more generous, say, in America than their secular counterparts, but these are also the same groups that want less spending on social programs. So what exactly is going on? Seculars are more likely to want to have government programs to help the poor, while their sectarian counterparts would rather do it through, sectarian institutes.
I would just say the religious people have a lot more people sniffing around them for their money than secular people do.
It's true. There's if you're a religious rube, there is any number of individual that is just absolutely and utterly skilled at taking money away from you. It's like a fucking...
Well, I mean, it's even beyond that, because obviously you're giving to your church, which obviously would count. And plus, at church, often, like, I've shown up, whenever I go down to the States, I visit my mom and I go to her church.
What kind of a church is it?
It's one of the small, sad, dying ones. Full of really old people, and no one knew. And
what was the youngest person there? You, I guess?
There's a number of children, like 10 and under. And then between that and the 16-year-olds, there was like a 33-year-old woman with Downs.
She's praying to God, give her more chromosomes. More chromosomes!
It's just a bad... I mean, this is... I always go, just to remind myself how most religion is. Most of it isn't this powerful, evil corporation sucking everything out of their members' pockets. Most of it is just these small little congregations of people that are just doing their own thing. But at this... I got a flyer for a charity, so you just get exposed more to that kind of stuff, and you're more likely the kind of person, if you get something like that at church, is going to go in your mind, hey, this is another way to do my godly duty, and you're just going to do it.
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point, too, is that in a lot of these dying churches and in rural areas, a significant portion of churchgoers are poor. And I'm not going to say anything surprising here, but people who are poor tend to be less educated, and surprise, surprise, people that tend to be less educated also tend to be religious. And at the same time, all of a sudden, the poor seem, at least to me, that to give disproportionate to middle class or even rich people. Like, the poor are just more generous. And I think the reason the poor are more generous, speaking from someone who has been tremendously poor and is still relatively, I mean, I guess...
we're still poor, can say it. It's
the
fine.
Standard of living, we're at the poor end of, the scale.
Absolutely.
I think you empathize more with being poor. I mean, if your whole life you were the product of middle class, you know, you're a fucking suburban kid and what have you, you may not really realize what it's like to actually have to rely on food donations, food stamps, which is what I think it's one-fifth or one-sixth of Americans now rely on.
Yeah, I remember it was shocking when you told me that those all that food that we used to give in school went to, like, families like yours.
Yeah, that's right. We every school, I mean, I've ever heard of has one of these Christmas baskets or Thanksgiving baskets. And it wasn't exactly something that I would go around publicizing, the fact that, hey, remember that can you gave at school? I ate that can of beans. You know, I'm not going to have that conversation.
You know, you could have that conversation now. You track down, like, one of the 12-year-old kids, and he'd be like, whoa.
So anyways, yeah, that was my point. I think that there's just more of a tendency for poor people to not only give but volunteer.
No, they understand poverty.
They really do. I mean, my mom was really active and volunteered a lot because she benefited from those programs and she wanted to give back. So guess what? The people that benefit from it often give back. Of course they will. They realize how much it helped them out. So the one time where they're not completely broke, they're going to give. And a lot of people that are pretty poor just give so much. And it puts the rest of the middle class and the rich to shame the amount of suffering that a lot of poor people do in order to be able to give. You know, they give when they could probably use the money for new clothes or just to go out one night of the week just for themselves. No, they're like, we're going to donate this away. So I think that's a
pretty
large
portion. Give it to the church.
Portion. Well, many do, unfortunately, giving it to the church. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is is the fact that I think that there might be even some truth, even beyond the whole fact that religious people are donating more to churches or participating in church-related activities.
However, it's all arranged and how they beat us in numbers and however you want to skew the numbers one way or another.
Let's assume for a moment that those numbers are true, because I'm going to just say, and this is just one of those bullshit statements, that intuitively it does seem true. It seems true because we're in that scene and we're the ones, like, we go around asking for money all the time. And if we were a religious podcast with the numbers that we have, we wouldn't be in any kind of trouble, I can fucking guarantee you. But then again, it would be really easy to go around saying, give me money or the devil's going to get me, or give me money and fucking God will look down on you favorably. It's not easy to trick you motherfuckers. We apparently have to do some kind of skilled-ass shit to get cash out of you.
We have to trick you into thinking it's quality stuff.
Well, that's our probably only dogma, that our show is actually good. But that leads me to the idea that because we don't have this shared dogma, you know, as atheists, because we're so different, you know, there's such a huge variety. There are conservatives just like there are liberal atheists that listen to us. There are atheists that are in fucking countries that have way different problems than what we'd have over here. But all in all, because we don't really share kind of a almost even a common belief, what exactly are we going to rally together, support one another, or even just put pressure to say, let's put some money towards this cause or that cause? We don't have a lot of agreement. The only thing we agree on is that there is no compelling evidence for God. That's where we start from. That's not a really good, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean we have a strong bond here. But at the same time, maybe we're looking at it the wrong way, right? Maybe that does cause a bit of a stronger bond than we might imagine if that kind of stance didn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, if nobody cared what you believed in, really, ultimately, it wouldn't matter. But unfortunately, we kind of do. So I'm going to put this out there before we move on, just to everybody else, is that if the numbers were even true, if there was some reason to believe that we gave less,
if by some horrible truth we are more cheaper.
Then I say that we actually have to completely reverse that. We have to be the ones that are more generous. Because think of it this way. If you're donating your money to some secular cause, you know the money's going to somewhere that
whoa,
fucking matters.
Let's not pretend that there aren't secular shysters out there.
No, that's not what
I
mean.
Or secular crap-ass charities. I mean, the number of charities that have an overhead where just the majority of it is going to the people running the organization is just endless.
But
I would give to a religious organization over a secular one if there was less overhead to keep my money from going where I wanted
to go. Yeah, but the problem that you have with a lot of religious institutions, I mean, beyond all the scams, I won't even tell you how many scams back in the day, you know, like the donate money for starving African children.
Well,
weren't you telling me
Lenny Bruce pulled a scam?
Oh, yeah. This is fucking awesome. Lenny Bruce pretended that he was a preacher. He stole some preacher clothing, started a fake ministry, and started collecting donations.
To a leper colony, was it?
Yeah, it was a leper colony. And eventually, here's the thing, because he did donate a big portion of the money to that leper colony.
Not so big of a portion, but a chunk.
A chunk. Of the $8,000 that he made, he donated $2,500 to the actual leper colony. But the reason that he didn't go to jail, or two, he wasn't found guilty of fraud, was because the other religious institutions could not identify him and as a fraud. They weren't capable of demonstrating that
doing anything different than many of the other organizations sending money over.
But that's my point, right? My point is that as soon as you cloak it in this religious garb, that you really can do anything that you want. Sure, that there are sectarian organizations that do good. I'm not going to deny that they do that.
But many other organizations restore Stephen Baldwin.
Oh, my goodness. Well, not that. But among others, I mean, a significant portion of what you're paying for is just going and trying to indoctrinate people from other countries when really they need food and infrastructure. Okay? This idea that we're going to go over there and give them religion and then it'll solve their problem. I mean, that's fucking horrible. But I'm saying beyond that, like, you can donate your money to secular causes. They're not just these, you know, esoteric causes. You can just say, I'm going to donate my money to establish a fucking library in my town, or I'm going to donate to this scientific institution that's trying to discover various cures or planets and other solar systems or just some awesome shit. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't always have to be donating money to suffering individuals. It can also be to just for cool shit.
Save the planetarium.
Save the planetarium. Right, exactly. How many fucking, you know, like, you look at the UK, right? They're trying to slash, you know, they're everything, apparently, over there. Including science funding, which they're like, oh, well, this is a luxury. Science funding is a luxury. And I say that, again, I mean, we don't necessarily need to rely on government to spend that money. Why don't we just get together, fucking put some money together, get her done? We have that ability, but we just don't want to.
You know, the people running Bill Gates' massive fund of money to go towards awesome things, they actually say it's very difficult for them to spend all the money that they're supposed to be spending every year. They have a hard time doing it.
You know what it reminds me of? Brewster's Millions. Remember that? Where basically the character has to spend like $1 million a day, and he's finding it difficult because every time he spends money, he keeps making it, which is not what he wants. So he has to try to find ways to like lose his money. He should have just given all his money to religious organizations. That's a good way to lose your money. Mm. You're not getting it back. Okay, the next topic we're going to talk about, actually, I want to mention the fact, by the time that most people hear this, it'll be too late anyways, but we're doing a live podcast tomorrow from the Atheist Alliance International Conference in Montreal.
It's even more than that, because I find that when I tell people live podcast from the Atheist Conference, they don't quite understand that we're going to be in one of the big yeah, audience halls. It might, and we have no idea. It might be packed to the gills with everybody and all these luminaries of the atheist scene, or it could literally be like 30 people standing around us as we do it. We have no idea what we're walking into.
And it's funny too, because we have no idea what we're walking into. We have no idea if what kind of reception we're going to have from the audience.
Yeah, whether or not the crowd is going to be like all 60-year-old professors, the kind of people who are going to be free Friday afternoon at noon.
Yeah.
Or if we're going to have some people under the age of 35. No offense to the older people, I'm just saying, like, it'd be nice to see some of our other less aged people around.
Well, you know, the aged people are probably disproportionately the ones that pay for the bonus show, because the young ones, they don't even have money. You know, they're the kinds that are saying, I can't get your show because I don't have a credit card or my religious parents are fundamentalists. So, yes, we don't want to disparage these patrons too much, but we have a bit of a fear.
There's something scary about the idea of us going into this and it being the stuffiest thing ever. And we don't really know. This is where our lack of atheist conference experience comes to. This is we're afraid. We're virgins.
You've
kind of done stuff before, Jake. But
I had a lecture in North Carolina that I did once. I tried to pop my cherry in saying, like, let me go speak in front of an audience. But the difference is, this is still the first atheist conference, and we're deciding, let's go do a podcast at the very conference. So yep. I appreciate our ballsiness, but we're going in there pretty much blind.
I had a dream. This is an imaginary dream, but this is what goes through my head. We do this, we say fuck, everybody goes, oh, the microphones get taken away, and Daniel Dennett, Santa Claus himself, stands in the corner shaking his head no. Just slowly, arms crossed, sad eyes.
Now, see, that's the thing.
Sad Santa
eyes. The show has to continue, so everybody would just hold their breaths until we were done with the, like, I would probably be on one of those crazy fuck you tirades where I'm just going over saying, fuck you, motherfucker, fuck, 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 and all of a sudden everybody loses their fucking minds. It'd be a hell of a time, though.
Mm. it would be a way to go down in flames, I tell you what.
Yeah, well, we're hoping that we're hoping that a lot of people that actually listen to the show are going to be there. I have literally no idea if we're going to go there and be completely invisible, or if there might be people that actually recognize who the fuck we are. It's to that degree. Like, we don't know what the hell to expect. So it's
very exciting and very terrifying.
Very nerve wracking.
If you guys want to tune in, what is tomorrow? It's Friday at noon.
Friday at noon Eastern time.
Yeah.
So I'll be putting up a link for it. It'll actually, if you go to the site, the live stream thing will be on the site, so you'll be able to just press play and just listen to it. I'm assuming it's going to be the same thing on the Atheist Alliance International website, but you don't want to go to their website. You want to go to mine. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
You're my patrons. Don't go to their website. Go to my website. Listen to the show there live. And I got to wonder, though, I mean, because of the distribution of fans, so many people are just going to be like, I can't even tune in at 12. PM live.
We're still recording it, and it'll still go up on the website
afterwards.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. So. And here's the cool thing. This is a special thing for you bonus members. Because of our involvement with the organization, I got to do a one-hour interview with Susan Jacoby, who's the author of The Age of American Unreason. So next week, you guys are going to be listening to my long interview with her. Ta-da! Doing more interviews, bitches. It's happening. This is fucking happening.
Pretty sweet.
I told you I would, and I did. And I feel pretty good about this one, so you guys, I'm sure you guys are going to love it. Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about is basically, I got an email that I want to read you from a new patron, and because this person is new, mm-hmm. we can't say no to anything they say.
True.
It's almost a rule.
We are slaves.
We are slaves! So this fan asked us if we could share our thoughts about baptism, but I'm going to read you the particular email. I know I'm a terrible reader at this, but I'm going to give it a shot, okay? Dear Jacob, I noticed you were doing member questions on the podcast. Would be great if I could raise this one. I have two children. I have never considered getting them baptized. However, my partner's parents have suggested that we should baptize them, as they reckon that this could be embarrassing when they get older and people ask them if they have been baptized. I don't know if that's that embarrassing. But I have considered baptism in the case that we end up sending them to private school, as it may give them a better chance of getting in. I don't think that being baptized is worth the paper it's written on, but if the schools are naive enough to believe that it means something, I'll just do it for the sake of it. What are your thoughts on religion in schools and baptizing children for religious reasons that you don't believe in? So you were on the do-it side, right?
I was on the do-it side just because like this. You know, so long as you're not slicing a piece of your child's penis off, then, you know, if you have to jump through a stupid hoop, if they say dipping your kid in some water is going to mean that they're going to be able to get into a private school that we want them to get into, I say do it. It's like if I had a girlfriend that I was going to get married and their parents were like, you got to do it at a church. I wouldn't be like, F you, no, suck my balls, I'm an atheist. I would just be
well,
like,
you wouldn't.
Sure.
You definitely wouldn't.
And of course, we all know my secret dream of being involved in a Jewish wedding.
Yeah, well, you have
to be the groom, to be in the chair.
If you are one of those listeners who's a secular Jew, and you should hit up Ryan. He's got a thing for you curly-haired
Jewesses,
Jewish princesses. Beautiful. I don't get it, man.
It. You got to understand. You can't say Jewish princess because that's something completely else.
Oh.
That would be like saying I'm into Valley Girls.
Right.
Which I kind of am, but after about 2 weeks, I just want to kill myself.
Well, I don't think they listen to the show, but I'm sure that we have a few, you know, relatively attractive secular Jews that listen to the show, right?
Sure. Probably so wherever they are, down like 15, 20 hours away from me, get in touch with me so I know what I can't have.
Well, whatever, man. You were asking for naked pictures not so long ago.
Actually,
so.
I think it was you that was telling people to.
No, you said that. You declared boobies. I can go back and I can show you the audio.
It sounds
that.
Like something I might do. I'm not going to deny. I just thought I remember a specific case where you were the one that was pushing it.
Maybe. Well, that was on the second try because we didn't get any response. So I thought I'd give it a nice little push.
Oh, boobies yet? You know, if this if we were a religious podcast, I'd have tons of boobies.
Maybe. It depends on the religion. Okay, here are my feelings on it. This is what I think.
Well, okay.
No, 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 no. Okay? I can't tell you enough no, and I'll tell you the reason why. Back a couple of weeks ago when the Pope showed up in the UK, the Vatican was boasting that the UK had over 5 million Catholics. And the reason it came up with those numbers is because of the baptismal records, right? They went back and said, these are all Catholics. Now, let me tell you something. Everybody that gets baptized is not a fucking Catholic, okay? It's just that they had Catholic parents, so on and so forth. The number's obviously inflated. So not only are you giving the Vatican this idea that, oh, yeah, we're constantly growing, we're on the go, because you are literally giving information. This is my second point. Do not give information to any religion about your child. Like none. Like zero. They don't deserve to know what the fuck their name is, where they live, when they were born. This is all information that a creepy cult does not need to know. And I know for all of you out there who think, well, Catholicism is pretty normal, they're fucking weird, okay? Do not give them any, don't even give them an inch. Do not give them an inch. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is going to affect my child's chances to be able to go into a school, like we were watching on Bill Maher, it's not the school itself, it's your involvement. If you want your kids to have a good education, be fucking involved, okay? Like, get books, read to them, those kinds of things. If you really think that the school is going to make that much difference in preschool, come on, everybody. Do we still think that, oh, if he doesn't get into that fucking preschool, he's not going to make it in life?
It's a good rant. It's a good rant. But I will like to put in there that a lot of people go to private schools because of the connections that they make that, in the long run,
They made a lot of connection in preschool for being at those private schools.
No, not preschool. I'm talking about. Like
For parents who are thinking of getting their kids into the private schools that need baptismal records, these are not universities or high schools.
These are
elementary schools. These are for 5 to 11-year-olds.
Sure.
And I'm saying, look, the thing that these
once they mix with the common swine, they'll never get into the private schools. Then they've been tainted. Tainted with the smell of poor people and their common children.
Their common children. I just hate this idea that people have that, I'm going to send my child to this school, and now they're going to know everything they need to know. I'm like, I don't even trust schools to be able to teach your kids anything of value. Like, I went through the educational system in Canada, one that's not considered that bad compared to other countries. I didn't learn shit, okay? Nothing. I didn't learn anything. You don't learn things in school. You just try to get by for the most part.
You try to pass.
Yeah. I mean, do you have a lot of memories of the things that you learned in elementary school or even high school? Arrest my case. You don't remember any of that shit. It was like an over-protracted daycare center for the most part. And how many kids are graduating that still don't even have like a level 5, a grade 5 reading level? I mean, it's sad. People can graduate high school or graduate schools without really having a good amount of knowledge. That, I would say, is, look, you can't avoid having to send your kids to school. You probably go to some jail or they might end up socially dysfunctional. But if you really want them to be educated, don't rely on the schools to do it. That's up to you. You know, and it's not even something that you have to do personally. It's just, number one, get rid of all kinds of shitty distractions in your house, okay? If you have too much entertainment and that kind of stuff, guess what kids are going to do? The funner stuff. Reduce the entertainment value a little bit. Pop in some fucking books. You're like, I'm bored. Then read a book, you little shit. That's all you can do.
I like all these educational tips.
Actually, my mom had a really good one, and this is actually real advice for parents out there. She had this brilliant notion that we were always, like most kids, saying, I don't want to go to bed. Because, you know, you tell your kid, bedtime's like 8 o'clock because I need you to shut the fuck up and I need time to myself, right?
Yeah.
But, of course, kids, you know, they have their own schedules. I didn't want to go to bed ever. But my mom came up with a strategy. Her strategy was that, well, you could stay up a little bit later if you read something. And sure enough, you know, like it started off with half an hour, and then when we got older, you could stay up an hour later if you were just reading. Now, for anybody that's, like, at the beginning, it might not seem like a bargain to a kid who's like, oh, I don't want to read, but then all of a sudden you realize, holy shit, reading is like a world of imagination. You get to fucking stay up for an extra hour in a world of imagination? Do you want that as a child? Yes, you fucking do. So I actually think that's a pretty goddamn good idea.
Yeah, it's not bad. So, I know you said that this was the last one, but I wanted to ask, we wanted to go back to that Ray Comfort thing about
That's right.
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, the Stephen Hawking thing. Okay, I forgot we were going to mention that one. That's I wrote an article a couple days ago because I found on WorldNet Daily, if you don't know what WorldNet Daily is, and you just love crazy Christian shit, you need to visit this site because, I mean, it's just phenomenal.
It, like, captures it all in one convenient spot?
It pretty much does. It is the right-wing Huffington Post. Is the best way that I can put it.
I see. So it gives the crackpots like a voice.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, World Nut Daily, as they like to be called, regularly has Chuck Norris chiming in, you know, giving his two cents on how the founding fathers were super Christian and how we need to get Bible lessons mandatory in schools and that kind of stuff. So he's not the only one that gets to be there. But, of course, Ray Comfort, is interviewed by, I think, what's his name? I don't remember the actual main guy who owns it, the website. But Ray Comfort was basically saying that Stephen Hawking's pronunciations that the universe did not require a creator and may, in fact, have created itself to be embarrassingly unscientific. And
This is the same Ray Comfort that said a banana is proof that God exists.
That's right. I mean, and so many reasons, really. It's got a pop top. It fits right in your hand.
It's like God put it in designed it so it fits in your hand.
And you know what's the most delicious part about that whole Ray Comfort Bananish proves that God is good argument is the fact that he actually even had to retract that very statement. He finally admitted that
it was stupid,
that he had no idea that the banana itself, the modern banana that we eat, is actually itself a mutant that was cultivated. It's a clone, right? It's just bananas in nature don't look anything like the fucking kind of bananas that you eat. They were specifically genetically engineered by human beings through the process of artificial selection exactly what we want.
The poodles of the fruit world?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. They're the Doberman pinchers of the fucking fruit sphere. But but that's the whole thing. Like, the banana is designed by humans. It's like, yes. It is amazing, isn't it? Because we designed it. It's like corn and apples. Go out in nature and find the ancestors for corn and eat that shit. Huh? Go eat a sour apple on one of those wild trees. See how long you fucking last on those pieces of crap. No, the food that you eat is specifically designed by humans, which is always why I found the whole argument for design hilarious when they use, you know, mass-produced food. But beyond that, just even the conceit of a man like Ray Comfort being able to say that Stephen Hawking is embarrassingly unscientific by pronouncing that, no, we believe that the universe may have created itself. I don't actually think that Ray Comfort has any knowledge related to science. So there's the embarrassment itself. I'm like, actually, hey, I would love to go to Ray Comfort and say, do you know why Stephen Hawking said that? I have even an inkling of a reason of why he said it, and I still don't get it.
No, it's a tough thing to wrap your head around. He's got a new book, The Grand Design. I checked out the audio book, figuring that, you know, it was a little bit more lowercase ABC for someone like me, you know what I mean?
You figure that if you hear it rather than read it, it's easier?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if a British voice tells me it, it might absorb better, but it's hard, man. It is a high level book. He doesn't take very long before he starts going into quantum everything's, and it's.
I haven't read the book yet, and the reason that I have not read it yet is just because I want to be focused on the task at hand, which is tomorrow. Because you know how I am. As soon as I read something that I get totally into, that's all I'm talking about for like weeks and weeks. And I really don't want the live podcast to be about Stephen Hawking's books.
Yeah,
it'll just be embarrassing.
Yeah.
It'll just be embarrassing.
Well, the key thing is there's not a lot of fluff in this book. It's all pretty... I mean, he goes through the history of it all so he can kind of paint it out again from the basics, but it's all science and it goes right from start to finish. And the idea that Ray Comfort would say that Stephen Hawking got it wrong.
Well, he's not the only one. A lot of religious conservative journalists also sort of like put in their two cents saying that, oh, science answers one thing, religious answers another, blah, blah, blah. You've heard this bullshit before.
Yep.
The only thing that I found was kind of hilarious is that no one cited anything that was said in the book itself. You know, they obviously only listened to one sentence, which is basically Stephen Hawking saying that the universe could have created itself. They're not interested in the reason why. And I think that's really kind of that's the one thing that no website that denies, you know, Stephen Hawking's pronunciations will tell you physically, like, according to the laws of physics as we understand why he's wrong. They wouldn't even dare. No one would goddamn dare because they don't get it. They don't understand it. It's way beyond their comprehension. I haven't actually seen any serious physicist even deny what Stephen Hawking is saying because, as it stands right now, that is the general consensus. You know, they're like, well, you have to understand that these strange quantum fluctuations could have produced a goddamn universe. And if that seems weird and confusing to you, that's just because the universe does not conform to the way that you perceive it. And that's just it. I mean, Ray Comfort's argument was that common sense should tell you that such a thing is impossible, that the universe had to be created. Common sense has nothing to do with reality. That's a human conceit of saying, oh, well, it doesn't make any logical sense to my sensory or inputs, therefore it must be wrong. I'm sorry. The universe does not need to conform to you. You need to conform to the realities of the universe. And that's
otherwise, you end up driving off a cliff on your Segway into a river and dying.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Everybody else had a laugh at his expense, so why not us?
You know, it's funny. One of our other fans on Fightlinker was mentioning that he was actually a neighbor with this guy, and he felt bad because apparently he was really involved in charitable work.
Oh, he's like the nicest guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he
had to die in his shitty fucking device.
Yeah.
What a tragedy. dying on a Segway. I mean, do you think he's going to make the Darwin Awards over that? I mean, it's candidate kind of material, right?
You know, the irony is so sweet. I mean, that's the whole thing I don't like about the Darwin Awards is that it's often, you know, you can die in a pretty embarrassing fashion and it not really be your fault. So I guess let's just wait and see what happens. Maybe the servo is ruptured, man. Maybe the Segway killed him. Maybe he wasn't just, I don't know, like, we all assume that he was, you know, looking back, yelling at his immigrant gardener, sipping a chai latte when he went off the cliff into the river. And
that's how I see it.
Yep. Because he's rich and we hate rich people.
I don't hate them. I just want to eat them. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat the rich. That's my kind of modest proposal.
Yeah, but we don't know. So, I mean, we'll get some cheap laughs out of it, but I'm not gonna pretend to say he's an idiot for dying that way.
No. I'm going to tell you, though, what my cheap laugh is. I think I know why he died in that accident is because somewhere in between the driving and the Segway falling off the cliff, the Segway became self-aware of how lame it was and then wanted to die.
That's really its biggest problem, is that it's an overgrown, ugly scooter for old people.
Yeah. And if it became sentient, it would know this and would have suicidal thoughts. Mm. And it don't be around on a Segway when it becomes self-aware is my advice to you.
I always thought that the Segway would have been a lot more popular if fat people could sit in them. You know what I mean?
It's true, eh? Standing up sounds like a lot of work.
As soon as they made it standing up, that was the failure. You figure Steven Spielberg or someone could have told the dudes this before they released it, but I guess I'm the genius.
Well, you can invent the sitting down Segway, which is called a scooter.
I won't. Those things are cursed. They'll kill me.
No, you know what I noticed? I noticed that there's a lot of new scooters, you know, the old people scooters, that now have these crazy domes. They're like completely enclosed environments now, man.
Yep.
So in the future, presumably it's like Back to the Future where everybody's on hoverboards and they've got these weird hovering domes that are going around, you know they're always going to be filled with old people. Hovering domes, fucking pocketing the sidewalk, forcing you out of the way because they're just whizzing on by, just about to go to the pharmacy and get more medicine to prolong their unnaturally long lives. I have given you a vision of the future, sir.
Oh, wasn't that something that you were talking to Susan Jacoby about, is that her new book that's going to be coming out soon is all about how old people are trying to live longer and how our general is opinion is they all deserve to be put on an ice floe.
Well, you know, she promised that she'd give me an interview for that book as well. So when it comes out, I mean, everybody who's ever listened to this show knows that I'm always talking smack about the fact that the baby boomers just don't want to go away and let us sort of, you know,
take over, have our turn.
Yeah, like our turn of the wheel. I just have this feeling that by the time that you and I are given positions of power, we're going to be 60 or even older, because that's how long it'll take for the next generation with all these drugs that we keep giving them to live. And they don't want to let go of that, and they just want to stay in power. Who wants to give up power? Huh? Have you ever met anyone who's like, oh, I have too much power. Here, so take some of mine. I don't like it anymore. No, no, and more no. Okay, well, you know what? I think that's the show. We'd like to thank everybody that is a contributing member and a patron. On the month of October, as Ryan mentioned, is when we get our act back together, and I'm going on this puppy full time again. The month of October is a bit of a wash in terms of memberships. I'm going to be providing most of the shows for free and re-extending everybody's membership by a month as a kind of an apology over the past few months, and just to get things organized and say, we're going to fucking knock this bitch out of the park, and you guys are going to be part of that. Yeah. And when we're re-solicitating you, we're going to give you reasons to resubscribe. That's the general way that we feel. So get ready in the month of October. It's going to be pretty awesome. More interviews, as I mentioned before, Susan Jacoby. I'm going to be looking at some lineups. We're going to be going to the conference, getting some promises out of some people for some fucking interviews later. And we're going to be feeding you the crack that you need so much.
Or that you at least seem to enjoy. I don't know if need is the right word.
No, they need it. Don't tell them that they don't need it. That's the first rule.
You need this.
You need this. If you don't have this, you're an incomplete human being. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.